Welcome to AgriPulse Newsmakers, where we aim to take you to the heart of ag policy. I'm Spencer Chase. Our guest this week is Congressman Randy Feenstra, who joins us to discuss the Biden administration's move to allow summertime sales of E15. But first, here's this week's headlines. New inflation figures out this week paint a grim picture for consumers. Hannah Pagel will have a deeper look later in the program, but the initial figures show inflation is at 31-year highs, as grocery prices are 10% higher in the last year, and prices for all items rose 8.5%. The White House argued the gas price figures in the reports came from a time frame before the administration authorized withdrawals from the Strategic Petroleum Reserve. Republican lawmakers have been critical of the administration, saying it is not doing enough to curb inflation. The Environmental Protection Agency released a new work plan to outline how it plans to meet its Endangered Species Act requirements during the pesticide approval process. EPA says it will give highest priority to court-ordered deadlines. AgriPulse's Steve Davies reports some ESA consultations have taken more than a decade, and the agency is looking to work with the administration's wildlife services to expedite that review. EPA has more than 50 active ingredients and more than 1,000 pesticide products with court-enforceable deadlines currently on the books. The EPA was also in the news for another reason this week, as the Biden administration announced plans to allow E15 to be sold during the summer. President Joe Biden made the news official in a speech at an Iowa ethanol plant. The change will technically happen by way of an E15 waiver due to a fuel supply emergency, and the agency is expected to file that documentation a little closer to the current June 1st deadline. The move is welcome news to a long list of people who have been calling for the E15 waiver, including Congressman Randy Feenstra. The Iowa Republican has been involved in Capitol Hill letters and co-sponsored legislation to lift the summer driving season restriction. We spoke to Feenstra and asked his thoughts on the news.
So President Biden was at Milo at one of the ethanol plants this past week, and he said that, you know, he wants to extend E15 to September. It's a little bit of good news. Obviously, I've been very passionate about having it year-round, and I think that's the step that we have to go. Bigger than that is, you know, we have to have energy independence and biofuels, energy, ethanol, biodiesel. These are all great opportunities, and I wish he would have expanded on those opportunities, but that wasn't talked about.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned the year-round aspect of it. Obviously, this is an emergency move being done by the Biden administration. We saw regulatory action by the Trump administration previously. I think there's general recognition that the cleanest way to make that year-round move happen would be through legislation, but your thoughts on the prospects of that on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, exactly. So we have a bipartisan bill that I introduced with Congresswoman Axne, the Homefront Energy Act, to try to do this, not only to create E15 year-round, but also extend the tax credits, also create some more research, and then eliminate Russia buying oil from Russia. So all these things put together are in a bill. We're trying to get it moved. The concern I have is the administration came out with their budget 2 weeks ago, and there was zero word on biofuels and any increase or any dollars going into biofuels. So that to me is a real concern. And I voiced my opinion in a hearing saying, hey, why is this? This is usually, you know, when the administration comes out with their budget, that usually is sort of the items that they want to push, and biofuels was not one of them. So to me, I have grave concern about that.
Mm-hmm. I had the chance to speak to one of your House Ag Committee colleagues, Angie Craig of Minnesota, earlier this week. She told me that in the Democratic caucus, a number of people are walking up to her and asking about ethanol, given the current gas price picture, given the Russian invasion of Ukraine. What are your Republican colleagues asking you?
Yeah, exactly the same thing. I mean, we want to be energy independence, you know, and every family, every business, they're feeling these high gas prices. I hear this going around to all 39 of my counties that, you know, everybody's like, what can you do? Well, very quickly, we have the capacity through biofuels, ethanol, and biodiesel to lower this price very quickly. And that's a lot of my colleagues, just like Sherry Bustos is saying on the Democrat side, or Ms. Congresswoman Craig. But now we have to act. And I think us Midwesterners in Congress, we all get it. But it's unfortunate that the people on the Ag Committee on the East Coast and West Coast are not conducive, are not singing the same song.
Well, and some of those East Coast and West Coast folks that you mentioned might look at the current commodity markets, see the current price of corn, current price of soybeans, current price of gas, and wonder, is biofuels the right way to go here? I mean, are you concerned at all about any kind of a backlash from your colleagues who maybe already don't support biofuels?
Well, here's the thing. I think we need to inform congressional people that don't understand biofuels. You know, they think that we're taking food and making it into fuel. That's not the case. I mean, we have DDGs, the protein that goes back that feeds our cattle. My in-laws, you know, we feed it all back. You know, it goes through the ethanol plant, then it comes back as DDGs. And so we're not taking our food and making it into energy. I mean, we're doing both. We're making sure that we have food for our animals and then creating energy. And that is getting missed in this whole discussion. And a lot of the people in the administration don't recognize how this all works.
We'll be right back with more from Feedstra, including his thoughts on input prices and the Waters of the U.S. rule right after this.
Regenerative poultry production is a process by which nature can actually recapture and restore the energy that is being taken out of our space.
Farm Credit helped Rahi build his dream of regenerative poultry farming and encouraging fellow immigrants to find community in agriculture.
Nothing beats a farm. I'm just pursuing happiness.
Learn more at farmcredit.com/beginning.
Welcome back. Producers across the country are gearing up for the upcoming planting season, and many are worried about the price and availability of some key inputs. Feenstra says farmers in his district are no exception.
This is a very serious situation right now, especially when it comes to fertilizer and the different inputs, the cost of seeds and stuff like that. Now, everybody understands we have high commodity prices right now in corn and soybeans, wheat and things like that, which is wonderful. But then you also can market those crops, and a lot of the farmers are marketing those crops ahead of time. The problem with that is that you also need to make sure that crop gets harvested to create your put that you had. And that's the worry right now, is we have lack of moisture. So people are gonna put in their crops, those increased input costs, but is there gonna be a crop come September and October? And you know, when you start going on the commodity exchange markets and selling ahead, this is a grave concern for a lot of our farming community.
Mm-hmm. But a lot of this is prices set by private companies. It's availability issues due to a wide range of supply chain issues. What levers are there for you and Congress, or maybe the Biden administration, the federal government writ large? What levers are there for you to pull on this?
Exactly. Well, first of all, there's a lot of regulatory issues that have occurred that the fertilizer is not being made in America. I mean, we have Orascom in the southeast part of our state. That was built about 10 years ago. Well, we can build more fertilizer plants, but we got to reduce the regulatory environment. We have natural fertilizer in Northwest Iowa. You know, we have hog and cattle manure and stuff like that. Those are great opportunities, but you have to expand the ability for others to create hog confinements and other things. And a lot of our regulatory issues, whether it be county, state, or federal level, has prevented this from occurring. So there's many things that we can do. And then also making sure that we can get product in. Right now, there's a real hiccup on the rail, trying to get product in from the rail. There's 20 to 30 days out on the rail. Usually it only takes 3 to 5 days from port. And that's really hitting farmers right now. I've had a lot of farmers that say, hey, I just don't have the time because of the late plant date that's gonna happen right now. I don't have the ability to put on the fertilizer. So I think there's a lot of farmers that are just gonna go without for a year, which is also very concerning.
Mm-hmm. So looking at one of those regulatory issues that you mentioned, that of course being the Waters of the U.S. rule. We did hear from EPA Administrator Michael Regan at a Senate Environment and Public Works Committee hearing recently that the administration is full speed ahead on their rewrite, even as a Supreme Court case is brought concerning that subject. Your thoughts on just generally what the agency should consider as it approaches that rewrite?
Yeah, this is a real concern. And we had a public hearing, or we had a roundtable with Director Regan about a week ago, and he brought that up, is that they're moving forward. The new rules should be out here in the next 7 to 10 days. But again, we pushed back and said, what's wrong with the current rules that we have? What's wrong with the rules that were set under the Trump administration? They're working. any new rules would be very, very punitive for our producers, and would actually overextend on what waters are, you know, what accounts for a water, for a stream or a creek or whatever it might be. You know, what the new rules would look at is say any little runoff would constitute a penalty. So we have a lot of grave concerns about what's happening with the waters of the U.S. and again, the EPA is out of control, and we knew this under the Trump administration. He reined it in, and we have to get back to making sure that they're accountable for what they're doing.
So there are a lot of folks that thought the Obama-era WOTUS rule went too far. A lot of folks thought the Trump-era rule didn't go far enough. Is there middle ground here, or is this a kind of a perpetual court system fight that we should anticipate seeing for a while?
Well, I honestly, I think Congress has to get involved. I mean, so you have EPA dictating back and forth, depends on who's in the administration. You know what? It's Congress's role to act and set policy, and I think that's what has to happen. We talked about that as an ag committee, that we have to do that next year when we get in charge, when we take the majority, and finally set this once and for all. To me, Congress needs to legislate and keep agencies like the EPA out of it.
What would that look like? Is that an appropriations rider? Is it rewriting that portion of the Clean Air Act? What would be the approach there?
To me, you have to rewrite that portion of the Clean Air Act. And you could do a rider also, but I think that area has to be rewritten and then passed. And I think we have the ability to do that.
Mm-hmm. So want to close on a different subject here. We see just this week, the Senate Agriculture Committee announced that it's going to be holding a field hearing later this month in Michigan. We've seen a number of House Ag Committee hearings in Washington, but when do you think you guys are going to be hitting the road?
Exactly. So this is a big deal. We are behind when we're talking about the Farm Bill coming up next year. G.T. Thompson, who's a ranking member of Ag, will probably be the chair next year. And, you know, we're looking forward to him even coming to Iowa, to our Iowa State Fair, trying to do a hearing at the fair come August. But we're really behind the ball right now, especially when we're talking about conservation programs, when we're talking about backstops for financial backing for our producers when it comes to crops and even other commodities and livestock. So we need to continue to have these hearings, but we're behind, and we have to continue to move forward and listen to what the public says and what the producers are saying to start implementing and putting together that next Farm Bill.
And just quickly here, as we come to a close, you say that the committee is behind. In your opinion, is the committee behind so much that reauthorization of that Farm Bill in 2023 might be in jeopardy?
I do. I mean, we'd love to get it done by the end of 2023. That's what we're talking about as a Republican committee. Again, there's a lot of moving parts. A lot of things have changed over the last several years. So we have to understand what new items need to be brought into that next Farm Bill and make sure that there's protections for our farming community.
Congressman Feenstra, thanks for joining us.
It's always great to be on. Thank you so much.
We'll be right back to discuss this week's news with our panel. But first, Hannah Pagel takes a look at the Consumer Price Index figures in this week's Ag by the Numbers.
If you've been shopping for food or filled up your truck with gas recently, you've probably noticed that prices are shooting upward. The latest inflation figures underscore why consumers are paying rising costs on their grocery bills and at the fuel pump. The Consumer Price Index from the Bureau of Labor Statistics reported grocery prices increased by 1.5% in March and 10% over the last 12 months. This is the largest 12-month increase consumers have seen in the last 31 years. Prices for all items rose 8.5% in the 12 months ending in March, which is the largest 12-month increase since the period ending in December 1981. The All Items Index had a 1.2% increase. That followed a 0.8% increase in February. The blue line shows the price percent change for all items over the last 5 years, and the green line represents food items. Accounting for over half of the All Items monthly increase is the Gasoline Index with an 18.3% increase. American Farm Bureau Federation Chief Economist Roger Cryan says that overall, we're seeing the highest level of inflation in 40 years. He said inflation creates a lot of price uncertainty and a disconnect between long and short-term pricing. Cryan says stopping inflation is critical. There may be some short-term pain to accomplishing this, but he says it will be nothing like the long-term pain if we don't. Steve Davies has more information on the CPI and his story on AgriPulse.com. For this week's Ag by the Numbers, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Farmers are always there for each other. We shed tears together. We celebrate together. But we also grow together. Farm Bureau is the largest general farm organization in the country. We have the farmers' back. If you're a farmer and you're not a member, we would welcome you into our Farm Bureau family. And if you want to know more about agriculture, come be part of this great family.
Happy to be joined today by an expert panel to discuss this week's news. And obviously the big news of the week was that Biden administration E15 announcement. And joined today by Jeff Cooper with the Renewable Fuels Association, Courtney Briggs with the American Farm Bureau Federation, and Ralph Lott with the United Soybean Board. Appreciate all of you taking the time to join us. And Jeff, I'm going to go to you first, because obviously this is something that the administration and the the ethanol industry had been working on for quite some time, securing this emergency relief. But I think everyone is under the influence that this is a pretty temporary solution. So where does the industry go from here?
Well, it is a temporary solution. It's a stopgap measure that we expect will get us through this summer, but we still have the issue of what to do permanently and long-term. And so this buys us some time. The announcement this week buys us another 12 months to get a permanent resolution in place before summer of 2023. And we are going to be actively pursuing every possible option at our disposal to make sure that we don't have this same problem next summer and that the marketplace can continue to sell E15 uninterrupted.
Well, and I imagine the cleanest possible solution at play for you here would be a legislative fix. And, you know, we recently heard Chuck Grassley, who, you know, people can, you know, respectable minds can disagree, but I don't know if he takes second place to anyone in terms of ethanol advocacy on Capitol Hill. We even heard he say that it's going to be difficult to move legislation. Your thoughts on whether or not a legislative fix could have legs?
Well, I tend to agree with Senator Grassley, and I would agree with you that he has been our most ardent champion in the Senate. It would be a heavy lift to get legislation through that would resolve this permanently in the law. We, of course, are going to look for opportunities to move that sort of legislation most likely or more likely as part of some bigger package that might grow legs and run. But we're left with other options as well. There's currently an effort amongst 8 or 9 governors here in the Midwest. They have certain rights under the Clean Air Act to establish RVP parity in their own states that would allow summertime E15 sales. So there are some other approaches that are being explored. Legislation would be the cleanest, but that's not the only way to do this.
Mm-hmm. Ralph, the administration says that this is a move that they were taking to help consumers deal with inflation, the rising cost of gas, et cetera. And I want to take a little bit of a different look at that, because we've seen inflation really across the economy, including in the grand scheme of agricultural inputs. I wonder for you as a producer, how has the current inflation, the current price hikes that we're seeing, how has that impacted you?
Well, I think it's affected all farmers. You know, we right now have problems getting some of the inputs we need for the farm. If you go any place with your vehicles, you think twice, because, you know, you try to pick up parts at 2 or 3 different locations at once, so you're not just chasing out there for individual stuff. But it's just affected everybody, and what it's going to do for fuel with farmers. We, on my farm personally, we no-till everything, so we use about 3 gallons of diesel per year for the entire year, so it's not a big deal, and we only buy diesel once a year. So we bought it last fall, which was a good move at this point, but come this fall, if prices don't come down more, we're gonna have to pay a lot more for it at that point.
Mm-hmm. How does risk management factor in here in a situation like this, as we see such price volatility, such input cost volatility?
Yeah, that's a real tough one. None of us have any control over that. We just sort of get the stuff we need, and we have to pay for whatever. We're very fortunate, though, that all grain prices on the Chicago Board of Trade are higher, too. So I think what the farmers will make will probably be similar to what they have in the past, just because we're lucky inputs are high, but also what we're selling is very high too. So that's a good thing happening.
Courtney, I want to bring you into the fold here, because, you know, recently we saw the EPA Administrator Michael Regan head to Capitol Hill and was asked about a number of things, E15 among them, but also with the Waters of the United States rewrite among them as well. He told, senators on Capitol Hill that is something that the EPA is still pursuing, even given the fact that there is Supreme Court challenges on the matter. I know this is probably a million, maybe even a billion dollar question, but does the agency have the chance to get it right here, or are we looking at potentially more court battles on whatever it is that the administration plans to turn out at this point?
Well, you are correct, Spencer. The administrator made it very clear that they are not moving away from their regulatory actions. They have that proposed rule that's still hanging out there. The comment period closed back in February, so they're working on responding to folks. The Sackett announcement with the Supreme Court announcing cert in that case has not derailed their efforts here. And, you know, to us, it makes no sense for them to move forward with this when the roadmap needs to be handed down from the Supreme Court on this.
So as we await for that Supreme Court decision, obviously the administration not sitting on its hands, as we've discussed, but what impact do you think the Sackett arguments, the potential decision there from the court, what impact do you think that has on the general timeline of the agency's action?
You know, that's a really hard question to answer. I think that the agencies would like to have a rule in place before the Supreme Court hears oral arguments in October. But we certainly hope that the Sackett decision will provide that clarity, that certainty, that bright line of jurisdiction for the regulated community.
We'll be right back with more from our panel right after this.
Looking closer, seeing further. That's how we do it. At Curious Plot, we're driven to find what's next for agriculture, animal care, and food. We stay curious because that's what it takes to grow understanding. That's how we plot strategies and tell stories that get results time after time. Marketing, communications, and consulting that look closer and see further. Curious Plot. We can't wait to help you tell your story.
Welcome back. There's been quite a bit of news from the Environmental Protection Agency critical to food and agriculture as of late, but how has the administration been to work with for food and ag stakeholders? Our panel explores.
I would say it's been very mixed because there definitely are issues that we've worked hand in hand with EPA on, but on WOTUS specifically, that has been a source of frustration because there were promises made to the agricultural sector very early on in Administrator Regan's tenure at EPA, and we feel that he has really failed to bring in the agricultural perspective when it comes to these WOTUS conversations. So we wish there was more stakeholder outreach, and we specifically wish that there was more outreach to small businesses.
Mm-hmm. We do see that the EPA is working to do some agricultural roundtables across the country, a number of state farm bureaus hosting some of those events. Is that enough? What more would Farm Bureau like to see in terms of agricultural outreach?
Well, let me be clear. Those regional roundtables are not ag-specific outreach. There are many different industry sectors that are going to be part of that, including the environmental community, the environmental justice community. So various points of view coming together for those regional roundtables. Those are not specifically ag focused, but we will have ag interest in the room at all of those roundtables.
Okay. Jeff, bringing you back into the fold here, you know, obviously we've seen this administration announcement this week, I have to imagine puts a smile on your face. We saw some SRE news last week that I imagine made you fairly happy. Generally speaking, your thoughts on kind of the temperature of the Environmental Protection Agency when it comes to biofuels policy?
Well, Spencer, we've seen a night and day difference between this administration's EPA and the previous administration's EPA when it comes to renewable fuels and specifically the RFS. We have seen this administration and Administrator Regan really embrace the renewable fuel standard. We've seen them commit to enforcing the program as intended by Congress. And I think a good example of that is the agency's, really changed approach to small refinery exemptions. Really on day one of this administration, they've made it clear that the days of just, granting in mass all of these questionable exemptions to small refiners, those days are over. And I think EPA's done a good job of backing up that commitment. We've found them to have an open door and an open mind, and they've been very responsive and receptive to us. And we've had a great relationship with Administrator Regan and the whole team at EPA.
Mm-hmm. Ralph, I know as a checkoff board member, you're probably not going to be diving headfirst into policy issues, but on the general subject of, you know, we talk about all these different policy discussions, the subject of regulatory certainty and understanding what you know is coming from the administration, what does that mean for you as a producer?
Well, it means a lot, especially here in New York. We always have our EPA looking over our shoulder here, making our DEC, making sure everything's got to be double checked before we get a chemical. They've got to look at it here at the state level. So it's regulatory is a thing every farmer worries about. You always are afraid you're going to be doing something wrong, and you're looking over your shoulder all the time to make sure you try to do things as right as you can usually. But weather affects us so big that we've got to do things at different times that we sometimes wish we'd done it earlier, because you can only do so much on a farm. My farm, we're only three of us here, so it's a little tough sometimes getting things done on time. We try to do everything ourselves. We don't hire any labor or anybody else to do the work for us. So regulatory is always something. My oldest son does all the spraying, and he's always keeping good records. Electronic records today make things so much easier for us. We can do a really good job.
Our thanks to Jeff, Courtney, and Ralph for taking time out of their day to join us. We'll be right back with more AgriPulse Newsmakers, but first, Hannah Pegel takes a look at a critical infrastructure battle pitting farm against fish.
If you have ever traveled to Washington State, you may have seen four dams on the Lower Snake River that appear to be working exactly as planned, providing irrigation, an affordable pathway for farm exports, and clean hydroelectric energy. But if you listen to some tribal members, environmental groups, and fishermen, those dams need to go away. To fully understand why, let's take a look at each side of the debate. The Columbia and Snake River systems have long been a home for thousands of salmon, but over the course of the last century, salmon populations have declined by more than 90%. That's according to estimates from the Washington Department of Fish and Wildlife and the Oregon Department of Fish and Game. But these rivers also serve as a main source of transportation for trade routes for producers and shippers who use these waterways to move their products in and out of the Pacific Northwest, as well as by utility companies to provide electricity to the surrounding communities. When we take a look at this map, the Snake River is around the intersection of where Washington, Oregon, and Idaho meet. The four dams that are under the spotlight are Ice Harbor, Lower Monumental, Little Goose, and Lower Granite. All sides have a lot at stake. There's no guarantee that breaching these dams will be enough to reverse dwindling salmon numbers. And if they go, grain producers lose an important shipping route, and farmers must find other ways to irrigate thousands of acres of farmland. All of that and the region says goodbye to 1,000 megawatts of renewable energy. But if the dams stay, all four species could continue to decline. You can learn more about the situation and the impact breaching these dams have on the global U.S. economy by going to Noah Wick's story on AgriPulse.com. For this week's Map It Out, I'm Hannah Pegel.
Did you know AgriPulse has all your favorite podcasts, including Open Mic, Newsmakers, and Drive Time? Take us wherever you go. Subscribe at AgriPulse.com or on Spotify, Google Play, or Apple Podcasts.
Agriculture Future of America is a nonprofit building transformational leaders in food and agriculture. AFA prepares college students to join the workforce as innovative and engaged young professionals who will shape the future of agriculture. Head to agfuture.org to find out how you can get involved.
Thanks again for tuning in for another episode of AgriPulse Newsmakers. Before we let you go, here's what's on the horizon for the week to come. Congress will be on recess for another week, and lawmakers can be expected to return to town the week of April 25th. The D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals is set to hear arguments in a case brought by hemp producers. They're worried about a Drug Enforcement Agency effort to seize hemp if it comes in with higher than allowed THC levels. Those arguments will take place on Tuesday. And USDA is set to release an annual summary for total livestock slaughter throughout the country. That report comes as the department is investing time and resources into processing capacity expansion. As always, stay tuned to AgriPulse.com for the latest developments in ag and food policy. For AgriPulse Newsmakers, I'm Spencer Chase. Have a good one.
Newsmakers is a production of AgriPulse Communications. For more ag policy news, visit agripulse.com. You can also find our new content on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Don't forget to follow AgriPulse and our correspondents on social media to get breaking news and more.